This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Bonnie North. This month's Milwaukee magazine is called The Home Issue. And among the stories about interior design and home tours is an in-depth profile on Milwaukee-based architect and architecture professor Chris Cornelius. Written by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's former art and architecture critic Mary Louise Schumacher, we learn about Cornelius's ambitions, how his Oneida heritage informs his practice, and what he hopes to accomplish with his work. We ask Cornelius to join us in the studio to learn more, and we begin with how he defines architecture.
It's much broader than building or construction, to be honest. You know, that's one aspect of it for me. It's really kind of a way of seeing the world. Like, it's a lens through which I kind of see the world. And, you know, as I matured as a designer, I started to realize that it's a much deeper cultural thing that we need to kind of acknowledge in a way. You know, for me, I see architecture as a production of culture. And it's not only that, but it's also the backdrop for ritual and other sorts of things in our lives. And it encompasses a broad spectrum of things for me, meaning that while it does include building and that entire process and sort of industry, it also is the production of advancing the ways that we think about the built environment. And ultimately, for me at least, buildings are a way for us to kind of reconcile ourselves with the earth, right? If we start to think about architecture in that regard, I think we would think about how we build differently and be more responsible about it. So the ways that I think about architecture are much broader than those things. So I also think about, like, how am I producing the artifacts of that? How am I producing drawings? How am I producing models in the process of creating architecture?
Well, and drawing is very important to your process.
Yeah.
You start there, right?
Yeah. It's, you know, the ideation process for me is one where it does kind of start with drawing. And in a way, it's a kind of, I've learned to loosen myself up in that regard, meaning I think most architects and even the ways perhaps that we kind of teach students to produce architecture is that the thing has to be conceived in your mind and then you go to represent it. But I believe that the way that we represent it can actually be a part of the production of the thing. So I usually start drawing. Sometimes it's about nothing. You know, like most people would call it doodling. For me, it's really a way of priming the pump, right? It's like a way of kind of getting ideas out. I believe that if our sort of minds are cognitively working, that stuff will kind of come out, right? And so, you know, there are stories like Paul McCartney and the Beatles, when they wrote songs, they would write them and then they would put in filler words, right? Like, yesterday was scrambled eggs, right? Like, it would just use that phrasing. So that's kind of how I draw, is meaning, like, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's going to be sometimes, but I feel like I have to get it into the world in order for me to start to think about that.
Now, is that true with commissions or just when you're thinking about things that nobody's asked you to think about yet?
It's both.
Both.
It's both, because the analogy for me is like athletic training, right? Like, you don't go out and run a 100-meter dash every day you practice, right? You might work on different aspects of that in order to perform on that day. So for me, the building commissions are, those are the sort of athletic events, right?
Those, like, are your races.
Exactly. Yeah. Those are my races. Yep. And so everything else is practice to get to that race. So I find myself being much more nimble when I do get commissioned to do things. I do a similar process. It's just that the ideas start to come a lot quicker. And then the other work, a lot of the other work, and the work that helped me win the Knoll Fellowship too, was the physical models that I was making, the drawings I was doing. When I did them, I didn't think there would be anything. They were just like exercises for me. I was giving myself assignments, basically. But I had a very specific sort of intention of things I wanted to explore. And part of that was this: how do I draw something? How do I make something that looks like we don't know who or what designed it? Can I start to take the architectural authorship, put that aside a little bit and then let the things kind of be something else. And that's where, for me, architecture is a means to explore things and explore ideas. It's a way of making form, space, and experience in a sort of virtual way so that we can begin to make those things better when we get to making actual buildings.
I was going to say actually building it, actually putting it on the earth.
Right.
You know, I think architecture, I love what you said earlier about the idea of this being a way to see the world, because all human cultures have built something. Mm-hmm. We need to live somewhere, somehow. And then what we do with that, whether it's just shelter or it's somehow more of an artistic expression, depends on cultures and depends on what that expression is. You know, what I might think of as being something personal and expressive might not be for some other culture, might not even be important. And so I find thinking about that is a really interesting way to look at how we're here on the earth.
Right. And I think the best examples, you know, I tend to, because I'm an architecture professor, I tend to sort the world in architecture, right? So there's architecture with a capital A, right? For me, that's what I'm trying to produce. And it's a small percentage of the buildings in the world. These are the buildings that people go and see, right? Regardless of what they were used for or if they're being used for those purposes anymore. They're examples of architecture that show us glimpses into the cultures that they served. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do and trying to tap into that aspect of it. So I do think that, you know, as architects, we should not be so, I guess we shouldn't be censored in a way that we want to make beautiful things, right? Like we want to make meaningful, beautiful things that are in the world that will be enjoyed for forever. Like 100 years from now, people would judge or see our culture in a way that would be about the architecture that's in the world. And that's where we should be producing things, right? Not just to fulfill a sort of present mandate, right, that we would begin to think about the
A more pedestrian need.
The needs aren't just being fulfilled, but we're actually putting these things into the world, thinking about how we are in a bigger spectrum of time, yeah.
So how does the indigenous way of looking at the built environment fit into your practice?
It guides everything, to be honest. I mean, I my culture guides everything. The thing about indigenous architecture is that it's always been part of our culture, right? We've always built things. The practice of building those things was always a part of the culture, but not in a way that was separated in any way, right? And it's true of the culture altogether, right? It's a series of reciprocities of things that went together and didn't get separated. Like religion wasn't separated, agriculture wasn't separated, building wasn't separate. It was always all encompassing of what you did. So we didn't talk about architecture. However, the ways that things were built and how they were built, what materials were used, what they were for, all had meaning and purpose. Things might have been colored or named in some way that had some ritual that went along with them. So I'm trying to pull those things back into. For me, it's not about replicating forms at all, really. It's not about like making a wigwam, a teepee, a longhouse, or whatever, any of those things. But it is important for me to examine how those things came about. What were the contributing factors to that thing? Not only the how people used it, but the materials, how the materials were used. Not to say that I would use the same materials, but to say, how can I translate that thinking into the 21st century? Because I think we ultimately have to be pushing the culture forward. Because if I'm seeing buildings and architecture as contemporary artifacts, I have to be able to push that, advance it forward. Because, you know, 100 years from now, we're not going to say, well, I made a concrete teepee, right? Like that's who, what yeah. is that? That
nobody
doesn't
do cares.
Anything. Exactly.
Yeah. And it sounds like you want to take the indigenous thinking, the way that everything is connected to everything else, and put that into the capital A architecture.
Is that
fair?
Yeah. So the way that I think about materials, assemblies, how it goes on the site, all of the things that go into the production of architecture are that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. It's about responsibilities, right? Really, it's about like how am I going to be responsible for this thing for the rest of my life in the world, and how is it going to interact with everything that's around it? So to be honest, it doesn't have to be a building like the Indian Community School of Milwaukee, which is out on almost 200 acres, right? Like it doesn't have to be in the middle of nowhere kind of thing, or in the wilderness per se. It could be in a city. Like we could begin to examine cities in the same way as sort of living organisms and networks of things, that when we place something into it, we could begin to think about how that thing is going to interact with the rest of that network.
Yeah, isn't there a movement to think about cities as organisms, almost as if they are organically alive?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the idea of like master planning things too. I mean, we shouldn't be so tied to that thing, right? We can't choreograph all other parts of our life in that way. So
as much as we might like to.
Exactly. So we have to build in that kind of, I think, flexibility for things. But I think if you know the kind of network you're putting things into and understanding that as a living thing, that we're either going to augment that or we're going to try to change that trajectory in some other way. But yes, I mean, seeing cities as living organisms is, and I think that they have a kind of logic of their own in understanding what that might be, or helping understand what that is. I don't think it's hard to say there's an all-encompassing sort of singular idea that any city would be beholden to, but to begin to think about that as a thing.
Right, and
intriguing.
How people use the space and the things in the space as
well.
Right. I mean, that's all part of it, too, because you could have that wonderful whatever that master plan is and put it down in the middle of a city and nobody goes in it because it's not the path that they would normally take, or they want to get over there and this is in the way now, or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like, you know, thinking about architecture and the built environment in that way, too, where we're taking into account the actual organisms that are using it
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and living with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And does it enhance that life, right? I mean, that's really kind of what we should think about. I also think that we should be able to think about it as an aesthetic thing. Does it add to our aesthetic appreciation of life, right? Does it help us understand that thing? You know, when we look at the lakefront, we see Calatrava. We also see Saarinen, Eero Saarinen's building as well. And one is really low and one is really high. One has a very distinct presence. And one has a different kind of presence. Like, I feel like the Saarinen has a much more distinguished sort of presence. It's not so showing off,
yeah.
Right? Like the Calatrava mm-hmm. kind of is. But that's kind of the intent of the thing, right? It is its own thing. Those two things are very different things, but they have to coexist. So those are the kinds of things that I think we should be thinking about.
Do you think they coexist well?
I think they do.
We're all certainly used to it.
Yes.
Now, whether that means they coexist,
yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they do. It's not like a predator and prey kind of coexistence. It's a mutually respectful. I think their physical position helps that, meaning the Calatrava is lower and the Saarinen is higher. And the presence of the Calatrava is one, you might approach it from the high point, like on the bridge, but then you have to kind of go down to it. And then the Saarinen is much higher. It has that sort of platform, that plinth that it sits on, which I think it inhabits very well, and especially from, you know, that side of the city.
I think it balances.
It does.
It seems
it
to.
It does.
Yeah. Two equals rather than one completely overshadowing the
it
other.
It does.
Do you get frustrated by people not appreciating the built environment that they're in? I think a lot of people go through their lives and they don't think about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Is that difficult for you as someone who thinks about this all the time?
That's not as difficult for me as the responsibility of the stakeholders and decision makers not caring about it. Here's an example. I think, you know, as an architect working in a city and teaching students, and where we have an architecture school, that's the only one in the state. So all of the architects, in theory, in the state are trained through our institution. I think our city should really be thinking about this much more deeply than it is, to be honest. If we look at a city like Minneapolis, there are a large number of buildings done by world-famous architects. So if you were going to study architecture in the built environment, I might go to Minneapolis before I come to Milwaukee. There's no real good reason for that other than the fact that we don't do that here, right? Whether it's a building tower, it's a museum, whatever it is, especially what's going on the lakefront, that is the portion of the city that is most visible. I always lose track of what it's called, but the U.S. Bank Tower, which I will always call First Wisconsin, right? But it was designed by SOM, and it is an extraordinary building. It is like, that's like our landmark piece here. And the things around that should help augment that, right? This is where I think those things should be.
And I think a lot of people would be surprised by you saying that that's a landmark.
Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, in the history of architecture, in the development of SOM and the tall office building, that is a remarkable piece. It really is. And so other buildings that get built around it, Northwestern Mutual and these other sorts of things, there's no real reason why those couldn't have been built by other world-famous architects, right? There's always a criticism of, well, why aren't you hiring local architects? You can't build those buildings without local architects. You just can't. You can't. So there's a way for us all to contribute to that, but to be able to kind of lift that up. So that then is putting things into the built environment that can be appreciated by anyone and should be part of our sort of architectural life, right? There's no reason that we shouldn't be. As a city, we're large enough for those things to happen. They really should happen. And I think it was Whitney Gould who kind of said this first, but she, you know, said Milwaukee is a city of second-rate buildings by first-rate architects, right? There's a lot of buildings that are designed by famous architects in the city that people don't even really know because they're not their masterpieces, right? They're not their landmark pieces.
You know? I'm thinking the Marcus Center. I think a lot of people just wouldn't know
that
was a Harry Weese building.
Exactly.
You know, or who Harry Weese was.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you go to Chicago and it's a lot clearer.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And things are sort of celebrated in a way.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's where I wish our city would, I don't know what the answer is, to be honest, but it's not like you can point to one entity or one person or whatever, but I wish we would make that important. Like, that would be important to the city that those things happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly as we position ourselves as getting bigger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Chris Cornelius, we could talk
for
all morning. This has been wonderful to meet you and to get a little bit of an insight into how you think about the built environment. But I want to thank you for your time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Chris Cornelius is an architect and an associate professor at the UWM School of Architecture. He's a member of the United Nations, and he's the subject of a feature in this month's Milwaukee magazine called Making Architecture Indigenous. It was written by Mary Louise Schumacher.